Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 16th of Av. And today we're going to see two relatively brief responses, one by the Netziv and one by Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, two respondents who we don't get enough of a chance to hear from. And when we get to Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, we'll sort of see why it happens that we don't have the opportunity to hear from him as much as we might like, because I've chosen a tshuva that's relative, that came up, but we'll see the technicality to come up. So the tshuva of the first one is the Netziv, who we really don't get to see very often, and that's why I wanted to see it. And this is from Chilek Dalet Simon Memchet, the fourth volume, response number 48, from the 16th of Menachem Av of Tuf Reish Lamed Vav of 1876. And he's responding to a rabbi's letter from the 28th of Iyar, whenever it was, but it's apparently about a man who had divorced his wife. He was very ill, and he had divorced his wife, and then he passed away. And we've spoken about this before. The reason to divorce a wife in such situations is to try to help her avoid the complications of needing a chalitza. Sometimes the person who's going to do the chalitza either wasn't observant anymore and therefore didn't want to bother with the chalitza, or wasn't close by, it's going to be complicated, and to avoid that, you would divorce the woman. So there was no loss of emotional interest in each other, right? It wasn't that the husband doesn't like her anymore, it's that he divorced her. So in this case, the Rav who's writing to the Netziv thought that the husband already wasn't in his right mind. And it's impossible. It's not that we don't like it. It's luckily impossible to give a get when one is not in one right mind. So this is what the man had written him. So the Netziv says, the information you gave me, I can't judge whether or not he was in his right mind. You didn't give me enough to know about. I'm sorry. This is what the Rav wrote to the Netziv, that he doesn't know how much he was in his right mind, that he didn't have enough evidence. And the question was he in his right mind from the time he told him to write the get all the way through until the get was given, right? Those are the important junctures. All throughout that period, those are the junctures when the man would have to be in his right mind in order for the get to be valid. If the man, sadly, you know, when we say somebody loses their mind, usually it's a negative thing, like they've gone crazy, but here it's because they're in the throes of death and things happen and they lose their lucidity. So if he lost his lucidity only after the get was given, she's already a divorced woman, and then he lost his lucidity. And so, but there was reports that after the divorce, when she tried to take care of him, meaning he's an ill man, and she's had been his wife for however number of years, but and the only break, the separation between them is that he's trying to help her avoid certain complications, so she tried to come and take care of him. She wanted to cover him with a blanket, she wanted to do various things for him that wives often do for their husbands, and he said to her, and I'm not saying, nor is the response I'm saying, that he was correct in saying this, but the report was the husband, the ex-husband would say to her, "You're not allowed to do that for me anymore because when they're divorced," and that would show that he understood the process of divorce, and it might be that as long as he understands what divorce is about, that that's considered good enough. And how do we know? I think this is the Netziv already talking. Yeah, it is. How do we know? Why would we think that he wasn't in his right mind anymore during the time of the writing and the giving it? The general assumption, where we have chazakos in halacha. So chazaka is that he's in his right mind because he has been in his right mind until now. So it's a chazaka until, right, until we know he's lost his mind, we just have a chazaka that he was in his right mind. And when we have evidence at this point, X point in time, that he had enough of his senses around him to know that she was now divorced from him, as far as he could tell, that he knew that she was divorced from him and therefore couldn't serve him. So the question is, in between, did he maybe lose his mind and come back? But we have chazaka sitting to the side. So if you have chazaka sitting to the side, I don't see why you would think that in the middle we have to worry about it, unless we had an event that occurred that told us the chazaka wasn't there anymore. But we have a chazaka, we can follow those things. So the Netziv says, if you're worried that when you were asking him about his telling you he wanted to get written, and you try to, so we check, luckily you check that the man is in his right mind and he understands what's going on. So you checked him, you say, both the time when he said to write it and the time of the giving of it, and he agreed and ratified he wanted it written, mikomakom data klishtahu, that he didn't really fully understand everything. He had enough sense in it to say, yes, I want it. But it was the Rav who's doing it felt like there are issues in his comprehension. So I've been in situations like this where you're talking to somebody and they say all the right words and yet you don't really believe that they really understand what's going on. Now, I believe, when I've had that experience, it was just actual comprehension. But this Rav is suggesting that maybe it's because the man was ill and dying and therefore he was sort of losing his hold, his grip on understanding the way the world works, and so it's a problem, even though he said all the right words in all the right places. So the Tziv says, that's like a Gemara in Yevamot that we have, that you had a Cheresh. A Cheresh in Halacha is a deaf mute. And halachically, and this is not our topic today, so we're not going to get into it. I think it's a very difficult topic to talk about, but halachically, a deaf mute was considered to be on a level with a shoteh, somebody who had lost their mind, was not in the right sense, or a katana minor who's not considered to have enough sense, enough awareness of the world to count as a full adult. So in a cheresh, so if you're worried in that situation over there, whether the person had clear, so for, not for halakha purposes of being like obligated mitzvahs, but you want to know if the cheresh can communicate, we trust that he has a dat tziluta, a clear head about him, or not. So the Nitziv says, but that would not be, that would only be about somebody who was a cheresh meikara. That would be about somebody who was born that way and has always been that way, meaning there's what's missing then. If they've never been, they don't have a chazaka. They never have been in their right minds. But if you have a person who, as far as we know, was in their right mind, and they were in, and they were all fine, and then we know that at over time their mind weakened, they're having mental issues, right? So do we assume that, oh, they've lost their mind? So the Nitziv says, no, in that situation, we all assume that they are weakening. But if they're weakening until we know they've gone over a line to be considered a person who no longer is in their right mind, then we wouldn't. And this is actually not the Nitziv's topic, but this has important halakhic ramifications for, let's say somebody's getting elderly, and let's suppose for a second that somebody who's not in their right mind can't do various ritual acts in the synagogue, right? Let's say can or can't get an aliyah, can or can't be chazan, right, to lead the services, can or can't, whatever the answers, whatever the things are. So the Nitziv's concept here would tell us that until we know they've lost their mind, since we know at one point they were in their right mind, then even as their mind weakens, we don't have to treat them as a person now a shote, who's no longer in their, has their senses about them. We can treat them as kechishuta, as they are losing and they are weakening. But, you know, if somebody, you know, once upon a time could lift 100 pounds and then they weaken and can only lift 50 pounds, just the person could lift 50 pounds. As long as 50 pounds is enough, then that's fine. And that's what we would assume about such people, it says in the Tziv here. And he gives an example, it's Gorn Gittin, about a person who has been killed, but as you know, after the mortal wound has been struck, we still talk about whether or not they have their senses about them in order to, like, things like command the writing of a get for their wives. So we start with the premise that they were, until they were wounded, in their right mind, and then they're weakening, and the question is, how is the weakening process going? At least that's the way he understands it. He points out that Rashi thinks it's about the weakening process there is not at all about losing his senses or not, it's about whether he can speak or not, but Tosfos there says in its question Rashi, and they say, no, it must be about the question of whether they're in their senses, it has direct senses about him or not. However, you read those Gemaras, though, he points out, the Beit Shmuel tells us that as long as a chola, somebody who is ill, can speak, and can tell us the words that we need to hear, then we're not machmir more than that. If they know that they can say, I want to get written, and then they say, and I want to give it to her, that's going to be good enough in terms of our standard of what we require to allow us to give this woman a get, and to have the get be considered valid. Unless we see some other evidence that he's really lost his mind. Meaning, you have completely insane people who can momentarily say the right words, and that's not going to be enough for us to deliver a get on the purpose, but that if you have a person who's speaking and we don't see evidence other than that of their having lost their mind, then we are allowed to rely on the fact that they can speak and we haven't seen that they've lost their mind to say that's good enough. And in the case of this man is writing to the Tziv about, there wasn't any evidence other than that he seemed to be weakening and absolutely could have been weakening. But other than that, it doesn't seem to be evidence that he'd lost his mind. And therefore, because if you had any other evidence, you would have told me in the letter. So clearly, you would have told me in the letter, but also you wouldn't have let the sofer write the get until you were more confident. So if you let the sofer write the get, apparently in the moment, you didn't see any actual evidence that the man had lost his mind. Then the rabbi who wrote, who was writing the Nitziv, had one other concern that he raised. He said that the person who passed away, the man who passed away, when he was giving the command for writing the get, he had said, I want to have 200 rubles. So he didn't say it as a condition. It could have been a condition. And this is where life today, this is me talking for a second. You don't like my interruptions? I always put out my email so you can make communication because I love communication. GROTHST@gmail.com. But this is a complication that then in our times makes a problem, because if a man today extorts money from his wife over a get, so there are many cases in the Gemara where the Gemara seems to accept that as something the man can do, and I think it's a lot more complicated than that. And when it's straight out extortion, I think that the Rabbanim were supposed to stand up to that, and I don't think these cases, I think there are complications of those cases that made it okay in those cases to look for it, and they don't always realize it today. In this case, he said, I want to have 200 rubles. However, that could, I don't know the situation, right? It could have been the wife has lots of money and the husband doesn't have lots of money and he is separate. And while they were alive together and living together, they shared their money. And now that he's going, that he's not going to be married to her anymore, he wants to have this money. For whatever reason, we'll get the reasons in a second, right? Theoretically, the reason could have been because he's going to, doesn't want to be destitute. You have this sometimes today, people for legal tax purposes will give all their money to their children in their lifetimes and then have zero. So you can easily imagine a person in that situation saying, no, I want to make sure that I have some money to, so maybe that's what it was. It could have been lots of things. But he didn't make it a condition in a get. There are times when one can make a condition on a get. He can make an actual legal condition. The get doesn't take effect, and there are all sorts of complications. You can even say, the get takes effect now as soon as you fill a condition, or the get doesn't take effect until you fill the condition. Whatever the, could have been a t'nai, but in this case, he didn't say it a t'nai, and at the time of the giving of the get, he didn't mention it. So, that sounds like, maybe, I don't have to worry about the fact that it wasn't fulfilled, except the Rav writing to the Netziv says, but I'm worried because we do have a concept in Halacha that's Melchamos. The Melchamos is a commentary, not a commentary. You have the Gemara in the late 10th, early 11th century, the greatest, one of the greatest rabbis of the time, one of the greatest halachic people of the time, was the Rif of Yisrael Chaf Asi, and he writes one of the earliest, but also one of the most popular codes of halacha, and the way he writes it is, he just takes the Gemara and basically removes all of the shakla v'tayr, all the discussion, and gives the halacha, and only he quotes only those parts of the Gemara that have the halacha. And fundamentally, that's what he does. Every so often, he pops in and says, and here's the halacha, or this is the discussion, whatever it is. It became a very popular work of halacha, because you could read it's much shorter than the Gemara. It leaves out all the stories, and much of the back and forth about how we find our way to the halacha. So, to leave out all the stories, those stories that don't have a lot of content. There are some, in fact, interesting places where the riff includes what we would have thought of as a garita, and yet includes it, that discussion for another time. So that's the riff. Long came a couple hundred years later in the Provence, for reasons that we don't get into now. Balamor came and seemed to attack the riff. Whole discussion among historians that we don't get into now. But then the Ramban, about 100 years after the Baal HaMor, writes to defend the Rif. So that book is called the Milchamot Hashem, the Wars of God. So the Milchamot Hashem in Beitza, in the Talmud, in Gemara Beya, had raised the point that this Rav was saying, with that, there's some problem we have to worry, maybe, that if a man, before he does an act, makes clear what he wants to have happen, then maybe that counts some to some extent as a t'nai, as a condition. And maybe we have to worry about that and say the act doesn't take effect. Maybe the get doesn't really take effect if she didn't give the money. So the Netziv says that what the Ramban was talking about was when the man is making a command to give something, it does. You need to. You know the words of t'nai because he's making. He's saying to the person who's about to do something, "I want you to do it X way." And so once he's made clear way he wants to do it, then the shlichut, the messengership, seems to not be complete without that element to it. So then the tip points out, he's discussed this before, there's a sugyan condition that's a problem, he's discussed this elsewhere, and he thinks both of them have what to say. They're both, the Baal HaMor and the Ramban, have valid points, but not relevant here, he says, because since this man himself gave the get, he didn't command somebody else, he himself gave the get, there was a condition on it, he should have spoken up at the time, and he should have made it a t'nai kafel, a full condition, and in all those kinds of ways. So the Netziv says he thinks we don't have to worry about it in all these kinds of situations. We say ma'aseh mevatel hakol, that the act of giving the get gets rid of everything that came beforehand, because unless he had done it in the right way, because that's where we apostate in halacha, that's where we rule halachically, that actions speak louder than just previous revelations of one's opinion or one impression. And there is also, the Netziv points out, a rule in Chazal, Ein Gilei Da'ata Begita. Now when it comes to giving gittin, this might be because we don't want to have these kinds of complications. We want women, when they get a get, to be able to confidently say, I am now divorced and I can get remarried. If you later find out that no, we have reason to believe that this is what he meant, this is what he wanted. So the answer is, even if a husband has given a get to a messenger and said, go give her the get, and even then says, oh, you know what? I really want it to be with this and this and this. Now, there's a complicated thing about whether the husband can nullify the messengership beforehand. That's a different discussion. But if he doesn't do that, then the shliach, the messenger, could just give the get. He's not really worried. He's not required to worry about what the husband's full intent was. Once the husband empowers the messenger that's in here, the husband himself gave the get. So it seems to be very clear that whatever it was he might have meant wouldn't be relevant. But that's just in theory. In this particular case, says the Netziv, he thinks that here, first off, whenever we give a get, we always say, there are no tanaim, there are no conditions, we say that, we make the husband say, and no thoughts in my heart, because you don't want to get into these kinds of complications. But also, the man had said, I want, that I should have 200 rubles, so why not just give it to his yarshi? Meaning it seems like the wife is willing to give the money and the heirs might have been her children, but it seems like she's willing to give the money, but the rabbi is thinking, no, I think the deceased had to have had the money or else the get is invalid. But the Netziv says, I know what you're talking about. This Netziv, this deceased, knew he was about to pass away. That's why he's giving the get. So when he says, I want to have 200 rubles, it's hard to imagine that he meant it has to come to me before I pass away. It must be, says the Netziv, not to my heirs. It must be that I meant for it to be given to tzedakah, and the reason why somebody would command that before they pass away is because they want to have the merit of having given tzedakah in honor of their soul, or as a merit to their soul. So if that's all he's saying, then there's no reason to think, says the Netziv, that he meant that the get shouldn't be valid until this. He meant, right, meaning, what does he care if she has to have yibum or not? Oh, I'm sorry, there are no heirs, right? He's worried about yibum, right? There are no heirs, he has no children. But what does he care if she needs yibum or not yibum? How would that connect to giving the tzedakah or not giving the tzedakah? I mean, if you give the tzedakah, I'll let the get take effect. If you don't give the tzedakah, I want you to be stuck with yibum. Why would he do such a thing? So therefore, the Netziv thinks there's that even though he said the word li, and this Rav writing to him had gemaras that said li means to me and my yorshim and my heirs, but not tzedakah, and they want to give the money to tzedakah. Netziv says, no, I might think that there's no reason to think there's a problem. That's not a problem in the get. He just wanted people to know that he would very much like it if money tzedakah would be given in his memory, so that his soul should get some benefit from that good deed having been done in mind of this person. So therefore, Netziv says, nothing you said to me makes me think that's not a valid get. I think it's a valid get, and that's the Netziv. So that is the Netziv on a get that was given. And the question was whether the husband was in his right mind or not, and could we interpret it that way, and were there perhaps conditions on the get that had been made that had not been fulfilled that also might present a barrier to considering the woman divorced? And the answer was, no. The Netziv's answer was, he thinks she's divorced and the get is valid, and the fact the man had a weakened state of lucidity doesn't mean that he was not in his right mind. That is the Netziv on a get issue. The Rav Yitzchak Chanan, so Rav Yechon Tzvon Inspector, wrote a couple of different volumes of Shut. This volume of Shut is in Siman Kuf Kaf Tav, verse number 124, is from the 16th of Av of Tav Reish Lamed Vav, also of 1876. I just noticed that we have two tshuva from the same day, not just the 16th Av day, but from the exact same day. Different parts of the Jewish world, different great rabbis writing responses. So this one is to my good friend Naftali, Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who was himself an important Rav, I think, in the Muslim movement. I think he's a disciple of Rabbi. Yeah, I'm right. He was a disciple of Rabbi Sol Salanter, and he at this time is in his early to mid 40s, 44 years old, I think. So he asked the question of Rabbi Sol Inspector. So Rabbi Sol Inspector responding and saying about a woman who there was a man they knew of. The Sol Salanter knew of a man who was saying that if a married woman leaves Judaism, Shehemira Data, she leaves Judaism. I don't think here, by the 1870s, I don't think it has to mean that she converted to another religion, although it could be that, but it could just mean that she renounced her Jewish involvements, that this rabbi type, right, you have such people today as well, unfortunately, people who have not learned nearly enough to be ruling on various issues, but they feel like they know enough to say. So he says, by her renouncing Judaism, leaving Judaism, that ends her marriage. And she's now like an unmarried woman. It's not clear in the responsum as to why it is that we care about this issue. Meaning, was it that now she's come back, she wants to marry somebody, and you didn't want her to have to get a get from her first husband? It's unclear in the truth. But just on the facts of it, he's saying, or is it whether or not it's considered an extramarital affair if she later has relationship with a Jew? Right? Let's say you have another Jew who's not connected to Judaism, therefore doesn't care about the fact that she's not involved with Judaism, but would care if it was considered adultery. Wants to know if it's considered adultery, and this man is saying it's not adultery. She's not married by virtue of leaving the religion, meaning he's saying if she leaves the religion, she's sort of broken the bonds of Judaism and the bonds of halachic hold on her life, and therefore the fact that halacha considered her married does not make her, she's no longer married. That's what this man said. But he said worse than that, right? He went further. That it was clear that it's not a question. It wasn't that he was writing to the Rav Yitzchak because he thought it was a question. It was clear all the poskim know that we treat her, that she's considered, that she is, not considered, she is in fact still a married woman because she didn't get a get. But this man, unfortunately, this is part of what the leaders of Judaism had to contend with already back then. The time of the Rishon Lezion, it's very clear. In the 1800s, there were maskin, there were people who were, you know, leaving Judaism all over the place and making all sorts of claims about Judaism, not too different from our times. We're able to make all sorts of claims about Judaism, and you have to know what to believe and what not to believe. So totally honestly, I was writing a Rishon Lezion because this man had said that he won't believe that he's wrong, he won't accept that she's still a wife until he has a clear proof from the Gemara. And until then, he won't listen to the poskim. So, it could be that this man is living with her for all I know. You know, I don't know what it is, but from the poskim. The poskim isn't good enough, right? The fact that Rishol Salanter says to me this, but the fact that Rabbi Natalia Amsterdam says to me this, I don't care. Right? And even if it's called Spanish Spectre tells to me this, I won't care unless you prove it to me from the Gemara. You can easily imagine people today saying the same thing. I want a Talmudic proof unless you tell me, you show me the source. Anyway, so Rav Yitzchak Lezion Spector says, as it should be true in our times as well, V'al zeh ra'ui li'itonein. That's worth mourning already. How could it be that we've gotten to a situation when somebody's willing to say that unless you show it to me from the Gemara, I deny that it's true. But he says, besides that, what do you mean you need a Gemara from it? It's all over the place in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, and Dalet Amud Aleph, Rishon Lezion, that about we say about Jews in general, Afal Pi Shechatai Yisrael, who they consider as much as they want, they're Jews. So the fact that she has renounced Judaism is halachically has meaning for various statuses of hers, but not in terms of saying she's not Jewish. Same would be true if she converted to Islam or Christianity or Chas V'Shalom, any other worse religion, any more clear avodah zarah than that. It doesn't matter. She's Jewish. Now, being a mumar has halachic status. Not that it doesn't matter at all. It matters, but there is an underlying Judaism she can never get rid of, and therefore, underlying halachos of her status as a Jewess will continue. So too the Gemara in Yevamos. With the Gemara in Yevamos and Memzayin and Bet says, if you have a mumar, this is a person who's also renounced Judaism, left Judaism, doesn't believe in anything, has announced he doesn't believe in anything, if he gives kiddushin, if he gives a ring of kiddushin to a Jewish woman, she's married to him, right? She's betrothed, but she has the kiddushin level of marriage to him, meaning his kiddushin takes effect. So if his kiddushin takes effect, of course, you need a get from that as well. And the reverse will be true for the woman herself. And Rashi there says that the reason is that Yisrael mumar Yisraelu, that a Jewish heretic, a Jewish person who's abandoned the religion, is nonetheless Jewish, can't get away from that. So two Gemara in Bechoros, Lamed Beis, a couple of sigyus you have in the Shulchan Aruch. And so it's clear that even if it's true that a non-Jew who gives a ring to a Jewish woman says, "Hareya mekudesha," this is the exact right words, it has no meaning whatsoever. Right? Non-Jews cannot create halachic marriage with Jews. It has no meaning. So if the Gemara tells us that a mumar does it, then it's clear that the mumar is still Jewish enough to create kiddushin. If that's true of him, then if it's true of her, if she was already married and she leaves religion, it doesn't do anything to her marital status. And she's like a married woman. And he even points out another simple proof as well. Gemara in Kiddushin starts, the tractate of Kiddushin starts by saying that if a woman's in a marriage, there are two ways she gets out of the marriage. One is the death of the husband, and the other is a get. And if, you know, abandoning the faith was a way out as well, he says. So, and the Gemara says, how come they tell us a number? Why do they say Aisha Kona Es Atzma reacquires her full freedom from, you know, marital bonds, b'chtedrach? I mean, it says in two ways. It says, how come you need a number? So it says you need a number, lemi ute chalitza, to not think that chalitza is included in the list of the way she gets out, for whatever reason, that's not our issue right now. But the musical inspector uses that to say, so it seems that they think the number is an exact number. This is the number of ways that a woman can get out of marriage. So if we follow this guy's opinion, who said, they should have said it. So that's not the strongest proof in the world, because you could think that the Mishnah didn't want to even contemplate the possibility that a woman would leave such things. Although the Mishnah is clearly aware of the fact of people who have abandoned religion, you know, the status of a woman, the category of mumar was well known in the Mishnah and the Gemara's time, but I could have imagined to take the reasonable corrector. Well, it could just be the Mishnah doesn't want to give that as an option because it's supposed to be unthinkable, and these are thinkable options. These are real eventualities. But in any case, he offers that as a proof. But then he says, none of this is relevant because it doesn't need proving. It's clear in many, many places. And it's also clear, and just if you think about it, we don't have a thing in Judaism that by renouncing Judaism, you get the right to throw off responsibilities of yours. There are ways in which we distance ourselves from a mumar, but their responsibilities as a Jew are all exactly and fully intact. And so, therefore, there's no reason to think about it. So he stops there. And that's why it's really a fairly brief tshuva. But I think makes a very important point that we forget about, right? Jews who have abandoned the faith are Jews for many halakhic purposes, even though they've weakened their connection to the Jewish people. And then he says, and on your other question, and this is an example of areas of halakha that I've spoken about only very infrequently because I think they're very technical and yet very vital. When it comes to a get, so it's still in our major theme, how do you write the names of various people? So, how do you write names in Hebrew? And if you don't get the name right, halakhically, the get has problems to it because unless the get identifies the people involved in a way that a court can know who's talking about, then the shtar, the get, the document, is not considered halakhically valid. So you have a man whose name is Hirsch. That's the way people pronounce it, Hirsch. He says with a segol, but that's not relevant to us. It's Hirsch. So, most people would have written the name as Hirsch, which is Hey Yud Reish Shin, but this man's name is Hirsch. So if you write it as Hirsch, Hirsch, it seems like you're writing the wrong name. So he says, we have a Chasam Sofer, a Chuvin Chasam Sofer, about this very question. He was asked a man who was called, they call him Harsh, Bepatach, a Harsh, and you write it Hirsch anyway, with a Yud. You write it Hirsch, and it's because that's the name. And he explains the reason there. So the inspector says, you see, our tradition, our custom is that however the name is pronounced, it's always written Hirsch, right? There's a name that, you know, a Yiddish German name, Hirsch, written Hey Yud Reish Shin. If somebody has that name, and even though it's pronounced in various ways, that's the name you write in the get. And he sees a Chiddush Yashay Sheva for Shlomo Kluger. He says the same thing. But if the man signs his name Hirsch, right, if he's a man who writes, in the 1800s it was still true, there are many people who didn't write regularly, didn't write their name regularly, it wasn't culture, many parts of culture were not so literary and that you needed to write your name in any real circumstance. But if the man is a man who writes his name Hirsch, then Hey Ayin Reish, in other way in halacha, that way we make an eh sound, Hirsch, like would be with an ayin. So if his name is named Hirsch or Hirsch, either one of those, you write it as, he'd write it that way. If you sign his name right, then you do that way as well. But that's only for the name Hirsch, and I think it's because it's an established name with an established spelling. But if everybody calls him Herschel, right, as you have today, you have important rabbanim named Herschel. So if your son's name is Herschel, so then the Rabbi Yisrael says he thinks you'd write it Hey Ayin Reish Shin Lamed, not Herschel or Herschel, because if it's pronounced that way, because I think what he's saying, he doesn't make it explicit, but I think what he's saying is because that name is not such a well-established name that you know that the name is always written Hey Yud Reish Shin Lamed. And he stops there. So we have two brief tshuvot, two brief responses by the Nitzim Reish Vector about issues of giving gittin, which are three topics that come up. Topic number one is, how do you know when or whether the husband has lost his mind to such an extent that he can no longer give a get? And Nitzim thinks that since we knew the husband was once upon a time in his right mind, and since after the giving of the get, he demonstrated that he at least understood the idea of a get and that she was no longer his wife and therefore said she shouldn't take care of him anymore, and that was good enough to create a chazakah around the actual activity, and of course that this rabbi writing him had seen enough to know that he was still in his right mind, and for the Nitziv thought the get stays valid. That was issue number one. And then the Nitziv, the Chan inspector, then had two brief issues. One was whether a woman breaks the bonds of marriage and ends her first marriage by renouncing Judaism and leaving Judaism. That was what some really heretic had said, because he's a heretic both in the fact that he got the wrong answer in halacha, and then it was very clear that he wouldn't accept the words of Rabbanim. So that's the original meaning of an apikoros, somebody who rejects the words of Rabbanim. So he, in the Rizal's book, they're proved and showed many sources that say that Jews remain Jews for their responsibility purposes, even if, sadly, they renounce their belief in Judaism. And then finally, a brief discussion of the name Hirsch, which the Rav Yitzchok Zalman Spector followed the Chatham Sofer in saying that the actual name Hirsch, Hey, is Hey Yud Rei Shin, even if it's pronounced in various different ways, there's an established name that way. But if it was turned into the name Herschel, or if the man signed his name regularly, Hey Ayin Rei Shin, then he should do that on the get as well. Or if the man, it was called Herschel rather than Hirsch, so then also that's a separate enough name that we would write it in the way that it sounds like in Allah, Hey Ayin Rei Shin Lamed as Herschel. That is some issues in writing, getting and thinking about getting issues for the 16th of Av. Have a great day.